You know, the other issue I can't help but flag there is this whole issue of zombie houses. It's, boy, talk about a workload issue. And where the least effective kind of policing, where we're really in a squirrel cage and we're just going back and dealing with the same problem in sight over and over and over again. So if we continue down the path that we're now on of actually foreclosing on and reducing the number of derelict houses that end up getting occupied by squatters and resulting in a neighbor calling the police bureau, yay, everybody wins in that proposition, including the bureaus and officers who get to spend their time on more particular incidents than the same problem over and over again. So we can try to tease that out. I think it is probably going to be different from precinct to precinct to some extent.
Mayor, I want to just follow up on something Commissioner Novick mentioned. Steve, you know, Seattle and a bunch of other cities have done exactly what you've proposed, which is they've tried to calculate the cost of the sort of externalized, the externalized costs of providing services in the least efficient and most high cost way imaginable. And of course, I mean, we've talked about this at council a lot, but the reason the city has a housing first approach currently is that it's not only morally the right thing to do to get people off the street and into a stable home, but it over time saves us a lot of money. Utah figured that out, other jurisdictions have. Seattle quantified that. And I think, while I appreciate that we're going to get some anecdotal data of this, I actually think we need to do a comprehensive assessment because the costs go well beyond just city services, as you know, Steve. They cover the uncompensated care that emergency rooms provide to people and the like. And the fundamental question is, what's the impact of making a serious dent in getting people off the street into stable homes? How do you calculate that? Well, we typically look at that and say, well, it will cost X dollars to get someone from here to there, and we have to provide services. We're not as good at identifying all the savings from costs that are embedded in the system that we don't necessarily see, but they're changed. And the classic example is the person on the street that is experiencing a mental health trauma that a police officer is called to address. Now, that officer now becomes the caseworker. So how we address that? We have a DOJ settlement where we have to train people to how they deal differently with people that are experiencing mental health trauma. Okay, but in fairness, that police officer was not hired to be the social worker providing mental health services. This is out of necessity. Well, what happens when that person is in great distress? We call an ambulance. That means the fire truck arrives, an EMS. Well, that is an enormous cost. And they're doing their best, and they provide the service very compassionately. Then what happens? Well, that person probably has to be transported to an emergency room. That's by the way, the bill for that emergency room transportation could cover rent assistance for about 4 months. Okay, now we're digging a bigger hole. That person is taken to an emergency room. At that point, there could be staffing issues, language barriers, other kinds of needs. So a bunch of people are going to jump in. That's going to create an enormous bill that hospitals typically view as uncompensated care, which gets allocated somewhere. Again, that bill might actually provide front door rent payments for a year to get someone off the street into services, and on and on and on. What Seattle and other cities have done is they've said, okay, that's all embedded in our cost system. Let's pull it out. And I think Steve's exactly right. If we were successful in really getting a lot of people off the street into stable homes, and we quantify what's the cost of upfront cost, then what's the dividend we get in not having people play out of position? Get those firefighters and police officers and other folks into doing other work, just as important work, but work that is often displaced because they are required to do it, provide a service that the community expects. And unless you really go deep and quantify that, it's hard to get there. Once Seattle and other cities did it, I think the public was surprised at how much money was going downstream in an inefficient way rather than upstream in prevention and in services.
Other suggestions, requests, points to ponder?
I just have a question. And Chief, you've been probably the most engaged in the Department of Justice settlement. Do any of these proposed changes give you even a shadow of concern that would put us further out of compliance with the settlement?
Actually, they
don't in the big picture. I mean, I'm always worried every time we start cutting at the edges. But given the fact what we're doing at training, in our mental health work, and the Unity Center, and the new officers coming in, I'm cautiously optimistic. I think we'll be okay in that area. I'll just say it. I'm not sure if it's appropriate for this meeting, but the DOJ case for the state is now done, and I was a little bit surprised at that because haven't had time to study and dig into that of what that is going to mean for the residents of Portland and the care they get. But no, we try to really judiciously make these cuts with certain populations in mind, and still try to do as much of the core work as we can.
Well, I want to thank you, Chief, and your team for, and also our budget office and our HR director, who's not commented on any of this so far this morning, for the work that we're doing on this whole suite of issues, which range obviously from the proposed settlement with our union for a future contract, and also involved getting through this tough patch in terms of personnel and upping our game and recruitment. All these things are moving at once, we hope, in the same direction in a way that's going to get us through this with the least amount of difficulty. I think you've really tuned this carefully, and again, I've got a couple fine points I'm going to spend a little bit more time on based on this discussion or anything else I hear back from my colleagues, but I just want to appreciate a huge amount of work that you're doing, trying to do this in the least problematical way for the community, and also to keep our officers out there working with heart and soul in the work, because they're under duress in all kinds of ways, some of them pretty scary, and the fact that there's help on the way, I hope, will be reassuring to them as well.
Thank you for your time today.
Since you invited me to comment, the only comment I would have, I think, is to emphasize the downstream importance of the proactive work, because that's what markets, is just as your story about the young man in the Hawthorne area, this is marketing this work to our community, and it changes the mindset that, you know, the police are bad, and why would you ever want to do that work? The more proactive work and calls they do, the more attractive this work becomes to others. And in the long run, we're, you know, obviously going to need to be creating the pool in Portland. We can't rely on bringing people, or solely rely on bringing people in from other jurisdictions. Portland's a great place, but as with many of our jobs, we need to concentrate on growing our own. And that marketing, the work of the Bureau, is hugely important to that, with the schools. Delighted to hear that the school officers are staying in place. I know as a parent, when my sons were at Lincoln High School, that police officer made a tremendous difference to those students. They were willing to talk to the officer about things that were happening before it went really bad, because they trusted the officer that their classmates would not simply be arrested and, you know, taken, you know, to juvenile hall, but they would be dealt with in a very caring manner. And that is what happens. So, and those are the kind of things that then make those students think, well, being a police officer actually is work that I might want to do. So, you know, besides the community trust, I think it's a great marketing tool, which is also why you need sworn officers out doing that as well, because they're the most effective in talking about the work. So all of that recruiting can't be done by non-sworn.
Points. Great. Well, thank you all very much. Appreciate the chance to air this thoroughly. Again, other guidance any of you have, love to hear it.
Thank you, Chief. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I'm going to look at that again. Anything else we could do to avoid that?
Probably should have it.